Hello, and welcome to the Common Geeking Program. This is a book club for geek culture, as it were. It's a podcast where we pick a topic, and then four people discuss that topic from geeky and nerdy perspectives. This week, I will be joined by...
Hello, my name is Laura.
Hello.
I can't not say hello like that. Hi, I'm Laura, and today I will be talking about Cosmic Love by Florence and the Machine.
Beautiful, and who's next?
Me, Austin, and today I'm bringing a little piece called For Whom Annabelle Tolls by Tom McWaters.
And who is our final representative this podcast?
Your final representative is a concussed motherfucker by the name of Patrick Brehm.
And Concussed Motherfucker actually sounds like a great band name.
And I am representing the song Tempting Time by Animals as Leaders.
And my name is Colin. I will be your host this week. You may have noticed that the domains our representatives are bringing are all musical compositions.
Of music.
Yes. that is because
indubitably.
This episode, I am bringing the topic of a song called Man by Reliant K off of their 2016 album Air for Free.
So Reliant.
So K.
The reason that I'm doing this episode is because I've actually wanted to do this episode
his whole life.
Since the very first episode of the podcast. I want to focus on how the structure, the format, and the instrumentation of a song can accentuate or improve its storytelling.
Why don't we go around and just say what our favorite kind of music is?
Everybody has 10 seconds. Laura, what's your, if you had to say favorite kind of music, 10 seconds, go.
I guess alternative pop, but I do have an incredibly wide range of things, like folk and not so much classical or country.
All right, Austin, 10 seconds,
oh,
go.
Oh, God, this is horrifying. I've been...
Isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is. I'm really bad at making choices and picking favorites, but for the past couple months, I've really been on like a Chris Thiele kick, so really bluegrass right now.
All
right,
Pat, 10 seconds, go.
I like everything but country, but my favorite is like... super old school emo, pop punk, and metal.
At this point, I don't know that I have a favorite, but I'm really drawn to Reliant K and their sort of clever alternative style. I also very much appreciate dubstep, EDM, metalcore, and things along those lines. Laura was counting down with her hands.
That's a lot of rings, Laura, but not the one that matters.
No True. Wedding ring.
I do have three rings, and none of them are about my boyfriend. They're all about me.
That's the way to
go. I don't actually think marriage is necessary anymore, but that's just me.
Poor Pat.
Tax benefits, man.
It's not poor Pat. It's just a stupid institution. We're not doing this right now.
Yeah, well, no, we're not. Different podcast.
Common sharing program.
The common sharing program. To discuss the song Man, we got to first talk a little bit about music theory.
See, we don't, though, which is why I don't like music theory.
Music theory describes how composers and musicians make music on a technical level. So it could be really all over the place. I'm going to focus on a pretty simple system used to break down music for theoretical analysis called Mi Mi Ha Mi Fo Sti Co. Now, that is a series of abbreviations. Mi Mi Ha Mi Fo Sti Co is a system, I think, pioneered by Oxford University. So, Mi Mi Ha Mi Fo Sti Co stands for melody, meter, harmony, medium, format, style, and context.
Context.
And then there's sometimes text. If applicable. So melody is just a most prominent line of sequential notes in the song. Meter is your rhythm, the beat, the feeling of the pace and everything. Harmony is grouping of notes into chords and their relationship and the structure of the song. Medium is your instrumentation. Are you beatboxing? Are you using real drums? Are you using synthetic drums? Then you've got format, which is the thing I probably want to focus on most in this song.
Yeah, that's pretty easy.
Format is pretty easy. That's the structure of the song. Most people know verse, chorus, bridge, chorus. That's a format. And you'll usually label those sections by a letter. Style is just the genre, the tone. That's pretty subjective. And then context.
Context.
Is any information that might not be contained within the song. Using these categories, Mi Mi Ha Mi Fo Sti Co, it is pretty easy to break down any song into theoretical components. And if you just challenge yourself to do this with songs you listen to, you'll really realize how similar everything is, regardless of era or culture or anything. But this is how I'm going to analyze the song Man by Reliant K. I think that just judging by its lyrics, it's a song about growing up and growing old. I think that the lyrics do a really, really good job of taking us through this process of aging in maybe just American culture. But I want to focus on some particular things they do that emphasize that.
One of the ones that is easy for me to talk about is the tempo speeds up at the end. And they literally talk about how like time is going by more quickly, which is something that definitely happens as you age.
Would you say that they are attempting time?
They are attempting time.
we're getting there, Pat.
You could say that the clock is ticking faster now.
It is. So. The clock's ticking
faster now. This is a 4-minute song. If you're listening to this podcast, you can pull up that song.
4-minute, 20-second Blaze It song.
You can pause this.
Yeah, you can pause this. Seriously, it's a good song, and I'm going to put music in here so you can hear it. I spent the last 6 years like Hoffman. The song starts at 140 beats per minute. It's kind of got a nice swung sound to it, so everything feels relaxed. And it starts with the line, I spent the last 6 years like Hoffman in a swimming pool, saying things like, I'm too old to be growing up. The clock's ticking faster now, I'm too old to be growing up. So immediately we have a feeling of lackadaisical kind of
carefree. I don't know. I interpreted that as like stagnance.
I think stagnance is actually pretty fair because the next line is, I've been lost at sea in a house off Driftwood Avenue. Mm. So it's painting sort of like maybe suburban life, but definitely aimlessness while relaxing like this. Hear the line, I'll pack some boxes and I'll move down the street. So still kind of dismissive, leading to the line, I'll leave the pirate ships to kids that don't know anything, which to me really is the first line that grabbed me like really strongly, because so far we have a guy who's maybe apathetic, not doing what he's supposed to do, but he's still pointing out that he's not a kid. Then the last line is, I'll be every bit the person we both already know. And sort of just resigning to the fact, like, hey, this is life. I'm going to be whatever I am. Who gives a crap? I'm not going to.
We open up the possibility. Is the narrator addressing the reader? Or are they simply talking about another person?
But this whole verse feels to me kind of like young adulthood, maybe living with parents, not necessarily taking responsibility for anything. And then we are jumped into the chorus. Wake up, it's time to be a man. Our B section. There's finally urgency in the lyrics, but the whole tone is still relaxed. The accompaniment kind of drops out and it's very smooth. It got twinkling feelings on top.
Some tinkling.
Well, there are two lines at the end. Wave goodbye as I outgrow the shadow of Peter Pan. So all that talk about being at sea, floating in a pool, all those things kind of finally come together through the metaphor of a kid who does not age is always very playful. It's time to be a man. At this point, Peter Pan is an old thing. So this to me actually kind of feels sort of wistful and nostalgic, almost wishing you could be a kid, but maybe not necessarily knowing how to move on. A piece of context here is the guy who wrote the song was a teenager when the movie Hook came out.
Those were different times, my friend.
But everything in that first verse comes together specifically to talk about not wanting to age. And this kind of feels like adulthood is looming.
Oh, no, I just liked the whole resonance with the fact that, like, one, talking about Peter Pan, creepy old fuck who doesn't age. Two, talking about his shadow, so it's like the mark that, like, Peter Pan left on him, because that's, like, something that you like when you're a kid. I mean, it's aimed at kids, of course, but it's also, like, a story that will deeply impress itself upon someone. I don't know. Leave a shadow.
Leave a shadow.
As it were.
And that reality check brings us to our next verse, the A prime section. We hit an accelerando, which is a speed up of the tempo. There's no more swing. Like, the notes are rigid. They are static. You hear drums hitting at 16th notes. So at 4 times the beat, you have drums, ooh, like, hitting repeatedly. Ticka 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 ticka.
Ticka digga.
You hear voices in the background saying things like, don't say goodnight and don't take your life.
Yeah.
And the voices are kind of in the background, so I do read them as maybe inner thoughts.
Yeah.
Because immediately after those inner thoughts subside, we have the line, I had another nightmare, baby, won't you come for me? Doesn't sound quite like chilling in a swimming pool. Kind of sounds like someone's waking up screaming in the middle of the night next to a person that's probably really angry at them for doing that all the time.
Okay.
She says, I'm in a house off Beechwood Avenue. I kind of like how these two lines paint that there's been growth and a relationship has been built, But one, he's not in a good headspace. Beechwood and Driftwood can't be very far apart. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the verse, the clock is ticking faster now. The clock is ticking faster now. Is not followed by another line. Instead, it's just repeated. The clock is ticking faster now. So that urgency is building, and everything about this verse feels more stressful. He's singing up the octave, and he's shouting, so now we have more energy, we have kind of more emotion coming through in it. He's hit adulthood, and he is stressed as fuck.
I also think it's important to point out that there's a line that repeats a couple times that mm-hmm. says, I made a mess out of the life that lay ahead of me. And that happens at the beginning, so mm-hmm. I do think it is somebody talking to his former self.
A true artist.
Almost retrospective. And I mean, like, we're all 20-somethings at this point, everyone here in this podcast. So some of these...
Almost not.
Oh, God. I'm sorry, no Laura. Way. I forgot you were so old.
Are you 29 right now?
No, she's 27. No. Oh, no, you're about to be...
You got time.
Not for long. You're about I've to got be 28. 10 more days.
Yeah.
Still
yeah.
got time. The clock is ticking
faster now. No, but like I think we can all pretty closely relate to that feeling of just like, oh man, every decision I make right now is going to matter forever and might fuck a lot of things up.
Every day of my life.
Yup. And after that line, we jump back into the chorus. And this is mostly the same. This is our B prime section. Wake up, it's time to be a man. The drums are hitting those 16th rapid hit notes on a hi-hat. The like that sound, but way faster.
You know, we could put in the effects for the sounds in post instead of doing them with our faces. I just realized.
I've actually made a rule for myself that I'm not going to do any singing.
Very appreciative right here.
Thanks, Pat. Fuck off. But the hi-hat sound almost sounds to me kind of like a stopwatch. So clock is ticking faster. The clock is ticking
faster now. Or perhaps a crocodile.
From Peter Pan with the fucking watch.
It's imagery.
Jesus
you might
Christ.
Be right. I don't
you're
know.
You're grasping for straws, Mr. I Want to Be the Gold Star Student right now.
No, I'm just derailing, man. This is not getting me points. Wave goodbye as I outgrow the shadow of Peter Pan.
It's time to be a man. And then we go to our bridge. I've broken the bridge up into two sections. A prime, because it uses the same chords, the same structure as the verses. We are ahead of the speed of the song. Drums now feel relaxed. And everything feels more positive. The piano has some playful comping in the upper register. The second part of the bridge is what I'm going to call C. And this is short. This is only 8 measures. The only lyrics are wake up, repeats in the descending melody. The same kind of descending, you know, from top to bottom melody we've been hearing the whole song. But I actually just want to point out chords for a second. In a scale, you got 7 notes, 8 notes, depending on if you use the full octave. And if you start a group of notes on a note in the scale, the number of the note is the number of the chord. So the first note in the scale is a 1 chord. The 5th note is a 5 chord. And in music, especially Western music, once our brain knows where 1 is, that's where we want everything to go. And the further away you get from it in the scale, the more our brain is like, get back to 1.
Usually, doesn't a song start and mostly end on 1?
There is some hard science behind why we use the notes and the spacing that we use. But beyond that, when we choose to write a song in a certain key or with certain chords, that's totally up to us as a writer. It is easier for the listener if we show them up front, hey, this is where this song is going to be. Because even if they don't know the notes at play, their brain can still comprehend it. So like, you don't know that you know it, but you kind of know it sort of thing. This song is relying on the 1 chord the entire song. It's going from the 1 to the 6 to the 5. And this little 8 measure section in the bridge is the first part where we don't hear the 1 chord at all. It is going from the 6 to the 5 to the 4. And that does bring about sort of a feeling of longing in music, to make things feel incomplete, to make them feel sweet but not whole. So we get this sense of longing, but also a sense of satisfaction.
The song is a prelude to what is hopefully a more successful life than perhaps he'd expected.
We go to another chorus, and that's the same. I'm just calling it B prime again. It's the same as before. It's time to be a man. It doesn't have the same high energy as that bridge did, but the last line is, I think, the most important line in the song, which is, I'll be every bit the person we both already know I can. It's time to be a man. So we've moved away from the sense of resignation to a sense of self-understanding and a goal, wanting to like become a better person. And as soon as that happens, we kick into the final verse. I'm calling it A because of the lyrics, but it actually has that longing progression of C, that 6-5-4. And And we're back to that screaming up the octave sort of thing, beginning with the line, "I used to see all of the world in positivity," which I take as maybe reflecting on childhood innocence. Followed by the line, "I've been lost at sea in a house off Driftwood Avenue." So we've moved back from Beechwood to Driftwood. This ends on the one chord, but it's what we call a 1-7 chord, so it has a note tacked on top that doesn't totally fit. The last note sung by the voice is actually the 5, the highest point of tension in the scale. So harmonically, melodically, and lyrically, we have a sweet ending, but not one with total resolution. At this point, he ended on the 5 because, like I said, the melody is always descending. It always starts at a high note and moves down to a lower one. He is always falling, and that is what we call text painting. So when you use the direction of notes and melodies to reflect the content of the lyrics. Yeah. And this feels like, you know, he's kind of accepted his life and lived it to his fullest. Maybe this end is death. I'm not sure, but it's not completely happy.
But also, because the text painting stuff, that's all up to interpretation. I think you don't have to see it as, like, falling. It could just be, like, descending or settling into a kind of routine.
Holy fuck. There is a giant cricket in my house.
Get rid of it. Do what you need to
is
do, Laura.
Is it singing to you?
I don't know what I need to do.
Get a glass.
Yeah,
get a glass.
I need to put a glass on it. Yeah.
Yeah. And be a man.
Well, the reason I like this song is it's kind of clever and inventive in the way that it subtly uses these little musical components to provide depth to what is already, I think, a nicely written song. I just think that these lyrics are nice, but in the hands of Reliant K, these lyrics really do shine, and I love it.
It's contained.
The deed is done.
If that cup starts moving, though, I'm going to have to leave the country, so...
Yeah. Now, I want to hear about some songs that you guys think maybe are enhanced or made intriguing by some of their less obvious components.
Super duper.
So Laura is first, and you have brought the song Cosmic Love by Florence and the Machine.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about this piece of music.
Oh, yes. Let me do that.
Can we talk about that the entire rest of the episode?
Yes. Let me re-record the summary just like this.
No, I said the rest.
I am talking about Cosmic Love by Florence and the Machine. This is a song that I have been a really big fan of for 8 years now.
Casual.
If that makes sense.
Only 8 years.
Came out in 2009, so 8 years is possible.
It's been out for like 8 years, whatever.
Apparently, okay. I got right on this train, which I didn't realize until today. So this was part of a mix that one of my friends, Lauren, made me, and she put it onto 3 CDs. Shall not name her last name on a podcast, Lauren. Not private. And it was just a mix of a bunch of, like, I would say, like, alternative rock, kind of unusual music. I don't know. It was like a scene thing. But this is a song that I always listen to, like, over and over again, because it just has such a strong emotion behind it that just really speaks to me, I guess. Mm-hmm. I try to break down why. If I really thought about it, I do know enough about music theory that I could probably make my way through. But when I listen to music, I don't tend to analyze it beyond whether or not it brings me joy.
Okay, now she's a casual.
God damn it.
But I did try to take some notes based on the structure that Colin gave us.
Mimi, how many fo stecco?
That one, yes. So the melody is, I mean, like, I don't know. I wrote down it was a female voice.
That's what I have, too.
And it takes a lot of twists and turns. Like, it's not as simple as just a descending melody that just kind of repeats. I don't want to say it's complicated, but it has a lot more to it than just, like, a simple up and down structure.
It does have a lot of variance.
Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely moves up and down, but it will often go backwards. It'll, like, invert what it just did for the sake of making it not feel samey every time it repeats a section.
And then the instrumentation will fuck around, too.
Yeah.
I have this in order, so we'll get to that, all right? The meter, it's very, very structured. It's very march-like. There is a lot of interesting drum beats that kind of make it feel more urgent than it actually is. So it's not a fast song, but the way that they use the drums in the meter makes it feel like it's moving more quickly and then kind of pulling back.
Very Florence and the Machine.
Very Florence and the Machine. Sure.
Indubitably.
Quite machiney, moderately Florencey.
A tad bit Florencey.
Welcome to the comic pedantic program.
The style, I was reading a little bit about it. Apparently, when Florence was making this album, she really wanted to make a tribal pagan pop.
Oh, her name's actually Florence?
Her name is actual Florence, yeah. Her bandmate is not named The Machine, though. Just in case you were curious.
So collectively, they are The Machine.
Ah. Yeah.
But she really wanted to make a tribal pagan pop album. And I think that you get that a lot in the drums. Yes, I know I'm frozen.
No. I was just going to say, you say you're going in order, but you are very beautifully capturing the style of the song.
I may have skipped the medium and also the format to go to the style.
That's fine.
The medium, it's piano, harp, and drums. The harp actually is a really interesting choice. And then I'm assuming the drums also keep with like a cymbal or like one of those like shakers with all the bells on it, because there's definitely that going on.
Some tinkling.
Yeah. Yeah. Some will have like maybe a tambourine or a bell.
The structure of the song is very simple. It is just like A, B.
A, B, A, B, C, B.
Yeah.
With some primes in there. So like the verses are all a little bit different, but.
Yeah, there's a bridge that's different, but it is pretty repetitive in the way that it does follow that structure very closely. And the context is actually really interesting. So,
This I want to hear because I got nothing on this.
Apparently, one day she was in her living room and was the most hungover that she had ever been in her entire life. And she and her bandmate wrote this song in 10 fucking minutes. The clock is ticking
faster now. Crazy.
Not entirely surprised based on the variety of the lyrics, which are mostly a metaphor, just painting items of the cosmos as parts of a relationship. So
yes.
Like there's no dawn, there's no day, you made me blow up all the stars like Nero from Star Trek 2009.
What I think is really interesting, the last piece that I have on the context before I get into the text, is that the way that she talks about this is she says that being in love means you give yourself up to the dark to being blind. What I find really fascinating about this song and what I hadn't really thought about before is that it's in C major, but like never sounds like it is to me.
It sounds like it's in a minor key.
It sounds really minor. A falling star fell from your heart and landed in my eyes. I screamed aloud as it tore through them, and now it's left me blind.
You should probably flush with cold water for 15 seconds.
Probably should have done that. And then it talks about going into the darkness, and it's all this like very troubling imagery, but in reality, I think that she's talking about like a very positive part about falling in love, but it's such a negative take on it that I think it's just this bizarre combination of major and minor. And
yeah, that's something interesting, because major and minor relative to each other don't make a big difference, except again what you choose as a composer. And I took this song as being in minor, but if the author's intent is to make it in major, that's kind of interesting that they would phrase the chord structure to make it seem sadder than it actually is
in such a minor way.
That's actually really, that is interesting.
Or it could just be like like either way they did it, it's still the end product sounds ambiguous, so they're definitely trying to mix these two things, and they're like, it's a double-edged sword, but I'm going to stick with the astronomy.
Glass
metaphor.
Half full. Laura, do you have anything else you want to say for this part?
I think it was a really interesting comparison between the Reliant K song, because I think Reliant K sounds really positive, and when you listen to the lyrics and you dig into it, is very dark in a way. Mm-hmm. And this is the exact opposite. It sounds very dark and very yearning and emotionful, and then it's just singing about love. It's just a love song.
And speaking of yearning, most of the song rests on the one, but also goes to the four and the six, so that 6-4 progression is also very much a part of this, the way it is that yearning section of man. Just backing up my claims so I don't sound making up some artsy fartsy bullshit here, but okay.
I mean, aren't you though?
I kind of am, but that's okay. So I stayed in the darkness with you. Thank you, Laura. That actually had some stuff that surprised me, which
yes.
I'm always looking for you guys to surprise me with this. And now let's go to someone whose song choice didn't surprise me at all. Austin, you're talking about For Who Annabelle Tolls by Tom McWaters. For Whom Annabelle Tolls by Tom McWaters. Tell me a little about this song and why you think it is so gosh dang clever.
Well, the name is clever right off the bat.
Yeah, true. You get wordplay enough. Points.
Good start.
Here, Tommy boy. Actually, recently I went to a sketch comedy show down at MOPCO downtown in Schenectady. If you guys don't know what that is, it's fine. It's like right by Little Italy.
Not that Little Italy.
It's not that little, guys.
They usually do improv shows and improv classes. Never been to those because that's not something I really aspire to.
Dude, give it a shot. It's super fun. Just go to like one.
In between like the sets of the sketch comedy show, there were some fucking amazing sketches too, by the way. But this guy came up, Tom McWaters is a local musician, and he played some of his songs, and this one, like, he just came right out of the gates, like, with this. Like, just
he's
playing.
Local to Schenectady?
Yeah.
That's
damn.
Awesome.
Or at least
now I understand why he only had
dude.
16 views and zero likes.
Exactly. Yeah. But I loved it. So then I went to look up more of his music, and I definitely need to buy his shit off of SoundCloud at some point.
So let's talk a little about the song itself. I found it very interesting.
We're gonna be real here. My ability to analyze harmonics and shit is fucking undeveloped as shit.
That's okay.
Or at least to verbalize. Like, I can hear what's going on, but I can't talk about it, which is really rough for podcasts. I feel like
it is. But but no, that's kind of the point. I want to hear from you guys because most people like know it, but they don't really consciously know what's happening. And that is just as valid a music listening experience.
That's me.
Yeah, so like this song, first I really when he starts playing it, like he starts out just with those chunky chords and the kinda old laid back rock type of thing. That's not like
so it's like he's not really concerned with hitting the beat dead on every time. It feels a little logy, and that's actually a lot of fun.
Yeah, and that's
from a listening perspective, it immediately made me start bobbing back and forth, like as soon as it started.
Yeah. It did the same to me, and then he started saying words, and I was like, this is kind of fucked up. I'm going
to
stop now.
Something that he seems to do with a lot of his music is to make it, like, he always makes his narrators or his subjects, like, seem a little bit off balance.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of cannibalism in this one.
Yeah. What is the line in particular that we're all talking about right now?
I was about to say three.
I wish I had a part of you on my plate. But not. Cannibalistic that one maybe.
Pretty weird.
Maybe.
Also, the lyrics, just I fucking love it. First of all, just because of the content here. You know, it starts out, "You are so delicious," like each thing, or "You are so incredible." Each verse starts out with some like
compliment,
vague compliment of this muse to whom the subject is singing, and you're just like, oh, it's a love song, kind of. It's a little funky, but but then it's this guy is so nuts. He refers to himself as a beast among the civilized, and like he keeps talking about using like these metaphors for eating the person or being eaten by the person who he loves, and then he's like, but not in a cannibalistic sort of way. It's fine.
Like, I'm not creepy, I swear.
Yeah, but then also the way that he shoves some of these phrases into the meter of the song is really funny. It's a pretty laid back song. It could be either in 4/4 or 2/4. I don't think it matters too much.
No, I don't think it does. I could definitely hear both.
You know, and so he's like, "You are," and then waits a beat, "so delicious," and then "you come in cherry or original," and it's like he's following the beat, but then when he mentions the cannibalism, like, first of all, that's surprising to you because he's saying cannibalism or cannibalistic.
and he says that word so loud and so high.
Yeah, so loud, so high, and it doesn't fit as easily into the meter as anything else, so he's gotta like he's gotta play around with the syllables to make it work, and I love it. It's a little bit off kilter. The form of the song is pretty simple. It's the way that I've cut it up. I think it's A B C, which is really just sort of the C section is like the
the C section.
Oh my god,
I've been avoiding that so hard all episode. I knew someone was gonna say C section. All right,
well,
Moving on from babies.
Anyway, so the C section is just like the second half of the A section, but there's a key change.
Very bluegrass sounding. Bluesy, bluegrass. I mix those two up. Those aren't the same thing.
Bluesy. I would say bluesy for this one.
Bluesy. Well, I mean,
I didn't hear a lot of grass in it. I'll tell you
no,
that.
But like, but it's got like the basic chord structure and maybe rhythm of a blues song, but definitely sort of a more folksy, goofy, and irreverent tone that maybe I don't closely associate with blues.
Yeah. It's like personal brand.
I think I would just call it a folky blues song.
I won't dispute that.
I kind of think there's a certain instrument structure.
I think that's all I got. I've got little to no context for this song.
Context?
For Whom Annabelle Tolls, that's just something that I want to think about for a while as a as a statement, as a metaphor, because it's like, okay, this is like For Whom the Bell Tolls, but it's Annabelle, we're talking about a person, so we're talking about a person, but we could also be talking about death, but maybe she's just got like a really pealing bell-like laughter, who knows?
Yeah,
he could just be nuts. I don't understand.
He could be talking about the doll from those movies.
Oh. But I think I'm gonna say that that's good for the domain for now, particularly the stuff you said about his choices with rhythm to really point out his own eccentricity. I like that. Very entertaining song. I guess free plug for Tom McWaters, For Whom Annabelle Tolls. Good time. You're gonna get three people listening to your song now. Congratulations, we're that popular.
Annabelle Tolls.
All right, so our final representative, Pat, you have chosen maybe the most unusual of the songs.
I'm just so eclectic.
Tempting Time by Animals as Leaders.
It's funny, because the time is fucked.
I'm going to say, just right off the bat, big difference between your song and the other ones you've discussed, no lyrics. So why don't you tell me why you think this song does so well conveying maybe a story just by using its music.
Oh, it's just the way you said that. You're just trying to be spooky. It was weird.
Yeah, Halloween's over, Colin. Come on.
I was just letting the music flow out of me.
It's just yeah, like, the end of Halloween.
Laura's turning red and I don't know why.
So,
I'm ready.
Biggest thing that always sticks out to me when I'm listening to Animals as Leaders is the meter.
I thought you were going to say the horses.
No.
Yay!
I'm going to talk about the meter. So, the big thing about Animals as Leaders and a lot of the bands that are similar to them is they like to play around with the tempo and just like fucks with your brain. So, for example, the opening phrase that Tozen Abasi, who's the guitarist, one of the guitarists, is playing in Tempting Time sounds like it's in like 11-4 or something, but he's really playing in 4-4. He just plays this phrase five times so that it goes to an even division.
Time signature is how we measure how beats are grouped together in a song. Most modern music is grouped into groups of four.
Or six.
So when something's in four, we think it's normal. If something is in 11, imagine dancing to a song where you have to count to 11 for each section. It feels very strange.
Common musical education program.
So essentially, he takes the common time, which is 4-4.
The common geeking time.
Phrases his guitar playing in such a way that it's based on an odd number of notes, but plays that odd number of notes enough times that it resolves at the end of a measure in 4-4.
Yeah.
He does eventually change his time signature later on. The way Reliant K gives you variety is they change their verses and their choruses ever so slightly with new lyrics and words, whereas Animals as Leaders will change a phrase and add like a new ending to it to branch off into another part of the song.
Mm-hmm.
The format is always like an intro, so that's A. There's usually a main phrase that you can kind of attribute to be a verse. So
yeah.
That would be like a B section.
I originally thought you were doing the song Soraya,
yeah,
which is very similarly eclectic. And that song's format. Okay, so Reliant K was like A, B, A, B, A, C, A.
Bibbidi bobbidi.
Yeah.
Soraya was A, B, C, B prime, C, D, C prime, E, F, G, C, outro.
It's an adventure.
It's a good time. It kind of makes you a little mad because you never know what to expect until you know the song.
can't get a grip on it.
As a drummer, I keep trying to like tap my foot along to it, and then they fucking flip the shit, and I'm just like, mm-hmm. God damn it! I hate you, but I love you at the same time. Stop being so great. Like, it sucks. So they do a lot with the rhythm, which I enjoy as a drummer personally. So I'll talk about actually the instrumentation as well. Mm-hmm. They only played the guitar parts, and then they programmed in the drums because they mm-hmm. didn't have a drummer at the time. However, they made it in such a way that the drums could be played by somebody rather than like
right.
making them super intense and crazy.
Yeah, if you're just writing stuff in a program or on sheet music and don't actually do it in reality, you could make something that sounds good but is impossible to play.
Yeah.
Right.
At least for one person.
So I appreciate that they did that. So this, a lot of people say that like maybe Animals as Leaders lacks a lot of like the bass of having a dedicated bass player. However, they play 8-string guitars, which they tune down to a low E.
That would make sense.
So drop tuning is where you drop the top string a step on your guitar so that it's the same tuning as the one that's 2 strings above it. So you can play open chords by just strumming 3 strings on the same fret. It makes a power chord, which is like a very popular rock chord because it just sounds good.
Because a power chord just has the notes that make up like the frame of the chord.
It's the root, the fifth, and the octave.
Exactly. So it's the 1 and the 5 that we've been talking about.
So
all music is 1 and 5.
Throughout the entire song, though.
Not true.
There's not much harmonizing that's going on. What's happening is one of the guitarists is playing the main riff. And the other guitarist is just soloing over it. Sometimes they will harmonize with themselves, like with the two-handed tapping, they'll harmonize 2 different parts at the same time with themselves.
The harmony in this song doesn't seem quite as complicated as some of their other stuff.
No.
The chords themselves actually feel pretty at home with a lot of other Western music. It's the rhythm in this song that really gets you.
Do they like do live shows? And yes. If so, do they mix up like the actual specifics of the melodies in the songs that they do at all, or do they've just got it down?
They got it down. So like he's soloing, but he plays the same solo every time.
By mix up, I didn't mean like make a mistake, but like just do little improvisations and embellishments right. and shit.
They typically play the song in its entirety, like verbatim, but in between songs, they'll like mess around and do some cool stuff.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
My personal attachment to this song and to this album as a whole, this is the first song on the album Animals as Leaders, which was released in 2009. This song in particular, I used to listen to it with one of my best friends, Adrian Dudnath. I'm going to say your last name on the podcast because fuck you. We used to listen to this entire album and like try to make stories out of it. This song to me sounds like a guy waking up on like a pirate ship.
Leaving it to the kids who don't know anything.
He realizes there's like a kraken or a sea monster out there that's trying to sink his boat. And he's like trying his hardest to steer through this storm.
That's fucked up.
The reason I think that is because of the way they do their metering and like everything else with their phrasing, where they keep adding new stuff that you're not expecting. It gives a sense of like
tension for sure.
Tension. Yeah. It's just like it's tense and you're just like, I want this to resolve.
Mm-hmm. I get anxious listening to these kinds of songs for the first time.
It's anxiety. It's literally this entire album is anxiety in song. And I think that's the reason why I liked it so much.
Anxiety in song minor.
I don't know. I think a lot of music does that shit. I mean, I had to pick up my sister. I always have the classical station on because I always hope that one day I'll just be able to recognize classical songs. And there was some Schubert playing and she wanted me to change the channel because she was like, this is making me anxious. And I was just like, what's going on? And everything was a little ahead of the beat, but she was not about it at all.
I had that happen where one of my friends was listening to like some really bullshit piano stuff. And I was like, let me put on some real piano. And I put on some Chopin.
I fucking love Chopin.
This person's mind was not musically sophisticated enough to understand Chopin, and he got very angry.
You sound like a pretentious dick right there.
Take some effort to be able to listen to Chopin and be like relaxing to it, I think, as you maybe would a Reliant K song.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But by saying someone is not like musically developed enough,
I mean, I think it's,
you just sound like a pretentious twat.
I won't dispute that either. Pat is calling it like it's real.
You're right. He's a pretentious twat. We can move on.
Yeah.
For open discussion, I actually didn't have any questions prepared for this because I didn't
listen to the right song.
Okay, that's part of it. No, because I really did want to hear what you guys had to say. I knew most of your musical backgrounds, but I didn't necessarily know how comfortable you'd feel with something like this.
So we're all being tested right now. Cool. Thanks for the heads up.
First thing I want to ask is, looking at how I have broken down the song Man by Reliant K,
yes,
would you guys agree with where I'm coming from? Do you maybe disagree? It's like, how would you refute or back up what I'm saying?
I mean, I think I see where you're coming from. And I think not having the context of knowing any of their other songs, I think that it's more about growing up and more about that transition just into adulthood, whether or not that's an age or a state of independence and uncertainty. I don't think it's quite as dark as you read it. I didn't read it that way. And I think part of that is if you're going to choose to make a song that has such a positive feel, like I am such a positive melody, like the melody is generally like a major key and it's is bouncy and happy. Yeah. Like I think that that's just as important in the meaning of the song as the lyrics are. And I agree that the lyrics do get a little bit dark there at the end. But I think that if you're going to end on that musically happy note, like being an adult is sometimes super shitty, but that doesn't mean that you end in a dark place. Like right now, like I'm actually in a really good place in my life.
With a cricket under a glass on your table.
With a there's a fucking cricket under a cup sitting on my floor that's staring at me. I haven't gotten my taxes back and I've been calling the IRS every day and they were due in April. Like I have type 1 diabetes. It's a pain in the ass to deal with. But that doesn't mean that I'm in a more negative place or I've gone back to or reverted back to a place that is more negative.
So what I'm getting from this refutation is that you think I'm horribly depressed.
Yes. Are you okay? Do you see a therapist?
That's cool, Colin. I'm depressed, too.
It could just be, like, averagely depressed.
Averagely depressed.
Colin, let's be averagely depressed together, Colin.
Okay.
But that's the wonderful thing about music, is that if we're in different mental spaces, we are going to read into the lyrics and the melody and choose the things that we're more interested in than anyone else would. So yeah. I read it one way, you read it the other, and both, I think, are equally valid.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, like, I agree with that, but at the same time, I kind of disagreed with just the actual usage of some of the words in the song. So let's look at what.
I was just exclaiming. I'm interested.
So am I.
Let's do it.
I personally thought it was kind of a depressing song, but I kind of got a weird vibe from his usage of driftwood and beechwood. So the very beginning, it's like, it hasn't become super urgent yet. He's still been lost in driftwood. And then it starts to get urgent and he starts to get a little crazy. And now he's at beechwood. To me, like, driftwood is bad. Driftwood, you're floating out. You can't move. Like, there's no way driftwood propels itself. It goes with the flow. The waves literally push it wherever the fuck they want. Beechwood, you've found solid ground. You're stable. Like, you're having a good time. You're wood on the beach. People find you. They make fires with you. You have a purpose.
They burn you.
Yeah, but you have a purpose. You have a purpose. Driftwood is literally there for no reason. It just soaks up water, and it sucks.
I have listened to this song hundreds of times since July of 2016, and I've literally never thought of those street names literally. Fuck me.
And then this motherfucker starts to, like, settle down a little bit, still depressed, but, like, moving in a positive direction, and he goes back to being driftwood. Like, fuck, I'm just gonna go out in the fucking sea again. Like, no, stay grounded, you motherfucker. Like,
maybe he thinks that, like, the two choices, or, like, the two ways that he's been able to live life are either, like, just at the whim of the elements, where he's just getting tossed around in the ocean, metaphorically, or he finds some solid ground, but then he's stuck in one place, and then he gets the stagnance.
I like that, and particularly alongside the beechwood is when he says, I had another nightmare, baby, won't you comfort me? So at that point, there's also some semblance of growth in terms of developing relationships with other people, which oftentimes is a sense of stability for some people, but he's still, like, super anxious, and that's that high energy part of the song.
Yeah, people don't fix him. Crazy how that works.
It's insane.
That was the one thing I could not get over. Like, everything else is fine, but, like, that specifically, I was just like, I take off my white glove and I slap you across the face with it. Whoever wrote this fucking song, Matt Thiessen.
There were two things in this song that really stuck out to me. The first is the Peter Pan lyric, like, doesn't work for me. It really doesn't work for me. Like, the way that it fits into the song is like, it's almost like they highlighted it, like they brought down the rest of the music. It sounded like the vocals got louder and everything else kind of dropped back, and they were like, and I'm not going to be Peter Pan anymore.
Yeah.
And I just like, it just didn't work for me. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I can't explain it in a way that's any clearer than that because I'm literally asleep. But, and then the other one is that I think it was interesting that some of the context that you gave is that it's a Christian rock band.
It is. Yes, they are.
They sounded
true.
But. I mean, I've heard other songs. This song doesn't sound super Christian, but
no. The two songs later in the album is a song called "God," and I did not pick that one.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that, by the way.
You're welcome.
I have a tendency to be a little cynical about Christian rock music. Like I tend not to like it very much because I read into it. Mm-hmm. But actually, I really like it. Like, it's an enjoyable song. It doesn't have anything that's like...
Looking specifically, Laura, then, at your song, Cosmic Love, talking about lyrical choices. Again, you gave us the context that the song was written in about 10 minutes. But looking at the text of the song, I think that that's actually pretty clearly reflected because, as I said before, almost everything is a metaphor for heavenly, space-oriented.
Right.
A falling star. This is the first three words in the song. Stars, the moon have all been blown out. So we're looking at a song that, again, like you said, can sound maybe much more negative up front. But I was really the whole time just focusing on, like, how does this space metaphor work? In your song in particular, how do you think the instrumentation, those heavy drum beats, how do you think the feel of the rest of the song backs up that space metaphor?
I think that the heavy drums really push the speed of the song. Sorry, my blood sugar is definitely kind of high, and I'm like having a really hard time stringing together words.
Sure, you're fine.
Okay.
It's good for podcasts.
It's great. Super great. So I think the heavy beat of the drum just gives you a sense of the pace. Listen, if you're going to space, you're probably going pretty quickly. But that's neither here nor there because I don't think that's really part of it. But what I think really does kind of help that the space or like the cosmic feeling is the harp, is having that like light stardust harp in the background that kind of brings it all together to create that feeling of being in space.
While man is full of, you know, metaphors about sea life, nothing in this sounds like a jaunty shanty of sorts.
You said that, Laura, that like the Peter Pan thing sounded a little off in the song because it's like, oh, there's no more Peter Pan in there. But like, I think as much as I was being facetious earlier about the clock and the crocodile thing, I think that all of the sea metaphor stuff, that's super close to Neverland, the pirate ship.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the fact that like the Lost Boys are the people who were living in Neverland with Peter Pan.
I think you're totally right, and I think that...
I think that train.
It would have been a totally valid song without that also. Like, all of the themes still would have been there. There still could have been this idea of time and movement and growth and then, you know, regression and it didn't have to have Peter Pan in it.
Fair enough.
And I'm not entirely sure why it pulled me out so much, but every time I listen to the song, I enjoy everything except for that one line every time he says it.
I'll get you that it pulls me out a little bit because it's a pop culture reference in the middle of a song that otherwise seems metaphorical. Though it does start with a reference to a David Hoffman film, so whatever.
Yeah, that's...
I don't know. I guess... just comparing it to Cosmic Love, with that song in particular, I guess I don't see a journey in Cosmic Love. And I think it goes along with your statement saying that this song is more about feeling.
Common feeling program.
And getting across an emotion than I think it is getting across a particular journey. Oh, yeah. Pat.
I don't know if you already said this, Colin, but apparently these motherfuckers like to bring up Peter Pan in a lot of their songs. So, like,
see, that's weird to me.
Wait, you're just saying Reliant K?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of another song where they specifically call out Peter Pan.
Lost Boy.
That'll do it.
Oh, no, it's not about that, though.
Come on.
Before I found my way.
You're going to tell me that they're making... Like
you did say you weren't going to sing.
And I...
You only made one promise.
Was a lost boy.
You broke your promise.
You're going to tell me that they're not referencing Peter Pan in that song. But
well, to be fair, in Peter Pan, the Lost Boys all just get killed by Peter Pan. So that's not the story of that song.
But he's outgrowing the shadow of Peter Pan, man.
Oh, yeah.
And he's using pirate ships, bro. Like, obviously, that's more likely a reference to Pirates Who Don't Do Anything, but...
They did do a Pirates Who Don't Do Anything cover for a VeggieTales album, and
they did
it for the movie.
Oh, Lord. I didn't know they were that Christian.
So I was thinking about the journey experience that you were talking about in Man. Mm-hmm. I think you're right that obviously Cosmic Love doesn't have the same sort of journey tale that... Man Does. That was a long pause for my brain.
Yeah.
But I think that it does talk about a little bit of the journey about falling in love. Like, it has a sort of, you know, this falling star fell from your heart is kind of like the first meeting. Like, mm-hmm. And in the dark, I can hear your heartbeat, but I try to find the sound. Think about when you're first falling for somebody and you don't know how they feel. And then she took the stars from her eyes and made a map to like go find that. And then she heard, you know, the lyric goes, then I heard your heart beating. You were in the darkness too. And so that's all of a sudden they're coming together as she could stop and feel his emotions and his heart beating as well. I'm assuming it's a man, which is very
heteronormative
cis of me. Yeah.
It's okay. We forgive you.
Thanks. But instead of having the stars come out, and the sun come back out, like they just stay in the darkness, which is what I find so interesting about the song is that it's about such a positive experience of falling in love and having somebody reciprocate, but like you're going to stay in the darkness together instead of like joining the light. It's a very strange song.
It's like when Pat asked me to be medium depressed with him.
We're going to be perfectly serious and reasonable about this, but I think that that's not actually like as discouraging a metaphor to talk about because like, The darkness.
The darkness.
Just because, really, I think that that's, first of all, entering the darkness with somebody could just, like, it could be as simple as, oh, metaphorically, I'm spending a night with somebody. We can definitely say, if I'm falling in love with someone, maybe I'm having sex with this person. And that is most often at night. This is not an afternoon delight kind of song. But then, like, maybe in a less glib way of thinking about the metaphor, it could also just be like, oh, we're going to go into the darkness together. That means that, like, they really trust each other, these two people. Face, like, everything that's bad around them as well as the stuff that's all glittery and harp.
Yeah. That's kind of the vibe that I got, especially after Laura's description. But going to the idea of the journey and how I think with Cosmic Love, most of that is pointed out by the lyrics rather than the
music. Yeah, that's definitely true.
Pat, yours has no lyrics. How do you think it does such a good job conveying a journey without a story?
The way the song starts out, it's just a guitar with a little bit of like drum just fiddling around in the back, and it's just like, it's kind of chill. You're just like, all right, getting the song in, and then it just like goes into this huge fucking like, it's just like fucking like.
We should start releasing transcripts of the podcast.
They just punch you in the face with
it, hits you like a train, right, Laura?
Yeah. Fucking train of prog metal comes in and just slaps you in the titty real quick, and you're just like.
Provocative.
The main like riff keeps going, and then the lead guitarist starts to like solo over it, and he starts to just like do a bunch of arpeggios and super fast picking, like tremolo picking, and it starts to build up the pace a little bit, and then once he's done with that, it goes into this just like super rhythmic, nothing really going on in the melody, just like straight rhythm, like
yep.
So and then it goes into like a slow part. So the way they use not only the tempo but like the construction of the riffs themselves helps to push you along on this journey, and it changes the feel enough times that you start to like get a picture of, in my mind, a guy on a pirate ship fighting a kraken.
Of course.
What I thought was most interesting about yours, Pat, is that it was much more classically structured than anything else. Like I think the rest of us do. We're really talking more about like a pop structure where it does do like the AB and like that just reminds me of so many of the piano pieces that I used to play where there was a distinct difference in each of the sections. Like sometimes there are even pauses where you have to just wait and say like, okay, I'm going to take this breath before the next section, but it's still the same song. And what I never really understood, and the like probably the biggest roadblock for my piano career is that I just wanted the A theme. Like, I just wanted to do the first, and I could never get past how much I hated having that change.
I think it's interesting that you would point out that Tempting Time is very classical, because the way that classical music progressed, usually from the 1600s up to the 1800s, there was not a lot of flexibility with rhythm. Mozart was considered crazy.
Radical.
For putting five measures in a phrase instead of four.
Exactly.
And in Tempting Time, you make that change like eight times just going through the song. Yeah. But even though that is still different because it was much less evolved music back then in some ways, I guess I kind of get where you're coming from, because with classical music, we are no longer attuned to those different formats, to how sonatas and concertos are structured. So to us, it sounds unpredictable and can feel unpredictable when learning it.
Even if it's not,
And that is something that I think flexible, like prog metal and metalcore can really draw upon.
Another point about the classicalness, the classicity, or is... all of the musicians in this band are classically trained. So Tosin Abasi is the like lead guitarist. Javier Reyes also plays a lot of the leads. And then Matt Garska is the drummer now, but it used to be this other dude whose name is Navin. But they've all gone through the proper training, I suppose, that you need to in order to become like a classically trained guitarist or a classically trained percussionist. And they use all those elements and then make progressive metal out of them.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Nice.
That's another reason why I think they don't need the lyrics, is because classical music typically does not have vocals, the instruments to kind of shine.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't, music doesn't require lyrics.
Yeah.
It's silly.
But it's
have you ever listened to Lettuce? So good. No lyrics, for the most part.
I've never heard
Lettuce
of
doesn't
Lettuce.
Do a lot of talking.
Are you making a joke right now?
No, Lettuce is
or
an
is
actual
actually
band.
A band.
Austin made a joke.
Austin, your song, I think, probably had some of the most raw entertainment value. and the lyrics definitely are whimsical and irreverent and definitely supposed to feel strange. But I actually kind of got that just from the actual harmony of the song itself. So blues is usually very strictly based around the one, the four, and the five chords. But even so, I noticed that in some of the progressions in For Whom Annabelle Tolls, in the progress of moving from like one to four, there are some chords in the middle that belong to different scales or maybe have a note that's raised or lowered. So even though foundationally it should be a basic blues song, it's just a little off kilter harmonically as well. So when you brought that up, how everything is supposed to feel a little off, that harmonic inconsistency jumped out at me. And it's repeated in the verses, but that is something that grabbed me. And I don't know if that's something you picked up on.
Yeah, no, I don't have the words for it, but like I can tell like when the chord is changing it in a way that it doesn't have to, but it's not like extra. It just feels like, oh, we're taking another step on the way to get where we're going.
On your journey. Yeah.
And it's also, it just sounds funky. It's got, they've got texture.
Exactly. And some of that texture is by like raising the middle note of a chord, so that instead of feeling like it's built into the scale, it comes from a scale maybe four notes over. And I think that while I did not get a particular journey from your song either.
Nah, this is just expressive.
I honestly think that For Whom Annabelle Tolls had the most consistent feel and coherent idea behind it, which is, I'm a little fucking weird.
Yeah. I'm into weird.
I liked it quite a bit. And I'm wondering, do you find yourself skewing more towards songs that have that sort of crunchy feel to them by being a little off kilter?
Well, no, not generally. Like, I think part of what like got me interested in his music when he started playing it was that it's like so different from a lot of the stuff that I've been listening to recently. I've been listening to the Goat Rodeo Sessions.
What?
Oh, yeah. It was Chris Thiele, Yo-Yo Ma, Edgar Meyer,
ooh,
another guy who I can't remember, and this girl who has like a Gaelic name that I can't remember or say when I see it.
What is this called? I want to look it up.
The Goat Rodeo Session. They do a lot of kind of like bluegrass jam songs that are like super cool and in time in a lot of ways, and it seems to me like mathematically strict in a way that this song isn't. Like, they're never like behind the beat a bunch, just chunking it out. Yeah, I was so like this hit me in just by contrast.
That's cool. I like that. And now I have one final question that I do want to ask you all. I think you've all done a really good job of addressing the brief of this episode, which is, how does the music enhance the storytelling? But I do want to ask, after listening to the song that I picked, can you each just very briefly explain why you picked the song you did after hearing the song I gave you?
We were talking about a music episode, and so I wanted to go with a song that I really loved. And that is literally as simple as it was. I listened to my entire music library over the course of like a week.
Oh boy.
And it was fucking awesome. But Cosmic Love was one of those songs that it was in my top five when we originally started talking about maybe doing a music episode, regardless of story. It's just a song that I love.
Austin, how about you? After hearing Man, what made you say, "For Whom Annabelle Tolls"? That fits in.
Yeah, no. So first of all, since you've been talking about this idea for a while, I want all the readers, listeners, geekers to know.
Geeks?
I originally, after hearing this idea, I was like, I definitely want to do Rick Astley's.
Never gonna give you up.
Never gonna give you up. Yeah, sorry, words.
Missed opportunity.
Yeah. Okay. But then I when I listened to the song, I was like, oh, we're gonna, this is, he's really doing some music theory right now, so maybe I'll pick something that I care about.
You don't care about Never Gonna Give You Up?
He will let us down and desert us.
Yep. Like, you know, if you listen to something a lot of the time, it'll just sound kind of natural to you. If it's something like, oh, I'm in a certain mood, I want to listen to X.
X gonna give it to you.
I wanted to go to something that I didn't know as well, so that I could maybe, just so that I could better understand the song, I had to study it for a minute, you know, like that.
Nice.
All right, Pat, in your whirlwind of a time tempter, what made you make the connection between our nice little happy pop song and that?
So, literally, the line where he talks about a pirate ship. Because when I listened to this song, every single time, I just kept getting pirate ship. Like, mm-hmm. By this song, I mean Tempting Time. So yeah. I listened to this song the most off of this album because Adrian and I kept trying to get through the entire album with our stories and we'd give up and then, like, try to start it over and then, like, it always went to the pirate ship, dude.
That is beautiful.
Anxiety in song form.
Thank you all for joining me in this conversation. I hope it doesn't sound too dry to listeners. I'll do my best to edit it all nice and pretty-like.
Or shallow and pedantic.
Or shallow and pedantic, as we speak in our pedantic voices.
Shallow and pedantic.
I will make no apologies.
But the reason I picked this song is, off of this album, there are a lot of songs that really make me emotionally excited for their music theory application.
Only you, Colin.
This is the song where the music and the lyrics came together. I remember even just like listening to the song for maybe the 50th time, walking around the mall on a break, and just suddenly feeling anxious, imagining myself in the context of the song, and it's gripped me in a number of ways.
Phrasing.
Are you sure that just wasn't being in a mall?
I've now worked at that mall for 5 years. I think I can handle myself.
Okay.
I don't personally feel anxious when I'm in the mall, but more power to you.
But no, the whole album, Air for Free, has a lot of songs that I think are excellent. They are a Christian band. I am not a Christian, but I actually really like their music regardless. I think it is totally worth listening to. What do you look?
The fuck are you?
Atheist. Like, hard agnostic.
When?
Years. Long ass time.
God damn.
I am not a firm believer in the sacrifice of Jesus Christ as the deliverance of forgiveness through divinity. That's not my jam.
Yeah. Also, I think if you want, like, this is great, common sharing program, but if you want to, I'm gonna try to keep this real short. If you really wanted to have a punch at the end of the podcast here, you could edit back, cut everything you just said,
uh-huh,
and instead say, "I'm not a Christian, but I am a god."
I know that I really like this song, but I want to know what you guys think of it, not just on a technical scale, but how much did you enjoy it? So on 1 to 5, brace yourselves. From 1 to 5, notes.
Boo.
Boo.
There you go. Yep. There it is.
I give this song 3.5 notes. It is catchy. I enjoyed listening to it.
A half note is longer than a quarter note.
Please see my earlier comments on things that pulled me out of the song. But it's an enjoyable song, and it's been stuck in my head for 3 days now, so.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. Could be worse.
All right. Austin, what would you rate this song?
I think I'd just give it a good 3 notes there, because, like, I enjoyed listening to the song, but I don't think I care as much or feel as deep a connection to the message of the song as maybe you do having, like, had this in your life for a while.
Yeah,
same.
I have different comfort songs that are very different. I don't know. Different angst.
If you want my real comfort song, my comfort song is the one immediately after this in the album. Air for Free will always make you feel happy. And I'm telling you that as a command. Go listen to it and feel happy.
Okay.
So, Pat, how many notes would you give Man, the species, not the song?
I'm not the biggest Reliant K fan in the world. I've told Colin this many a time.
Mm-hmm.
I still slightly enjoyed this song, so I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5 notes. It's just way too repetitive for me.
Yeah, no, I totally get you. And the repetitive nature is...
Especially with the one you chose.
Yeah, so. I was going to
yeah,
say.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'm going to award our Gold Star student. I was originally thinking of just doing the criteria of whose song I like the best.
That's a dumb criteria.
I don't think I'm going to do that because you guys all surprised me in different ways in this conversation. I do want to say the song I enjoyed the most was Austin's song. It's not necessarily a song that I'm going to go listen to or add to my library, but as something to like be diverted to, hey, check this out. I had more fun, I think, listening to yours than the other two.
Yeah.
Me too.
And I'm not going to give last place because I don't want to make anyone feel bad. I'm just going to give Austin the nice first place. So
I want to know.
Yeah, no, I'm curious.
Laura, yours was last.
Yeah, right.
I'm not going to lie. I did not enjoy Cosmic Love for a number of reasons, most of them being based in some of the harmonic choices, the very hollow harmonic nature of the song.
Also probably because you're sexist, because it was the only one that was sung by a woman.
I don't like her voice at all.
Mine wasn't sung by anybody, Laura. What are you talking about?
I don't know. I'm just trying to blow up Colin's spot.
All the members of Animals as Leaders are dudes, though.
Nice.
This has been a low-key versus episode between Colin and Laura, apparently.
Isn't every episode like a low-key versus episode between Colin and someone?
No, when he's not in there, it's just a dig at Colin.
Yeah, when I'm not in here, everyone fights me, so I gotta fight back when I'm here. So now I'm gonna go to how well you all did this week. So aside from your song, I'm going to award our Gold Star student the Golden Equal Temperament, which is the tuning system we use for pianos, because pianos are never perfectly in tune compared to other instruments. So the Golden Equal Temperament thinking, because I don't know yet.
I was gonna say, do you think or
okay,
you know?
Let me interject here real quick. You sounded just as big of a pretentious twat as before.
I was just thinking how I never really thought about that before, but that makes like perfect sense.
Yep.
Not well, yes, the twat thing, but mostly.
Yes,
the perfect temperament. Because like with a shit ton of other instruments, you only have like a couple strings to tune to each other,
mm-hmm.
or you have to like move a slide,
right?
And it's just like one thing.
With aerophones, like wind, brass, and stuff like that, aerophones you can control very precisely what's happening. You can tune to your ear. Pianos, you have like hundreds of strings set to certain pitches, so you cannot change those on the fly.
And people called piano tuners.
Exactly. You need to hire someone
Stop
to tune
stalling.
That shit.
Tell us who won.
This Golden Equal Temperament is going to go, I believe. I'm going to give it to Pat.
Let's go!
All right. I went into this really wanting to go for Austin because
Ooh.
Of how much I enjoyed his song and his perfect picking it.
It's Star Trek all over again. Let's go!
And you had probably the most insightful digs at my song, despite Laura's excellent arsenal against it. You picked out some things that I never really thought of, and that made me feel slightly less pretentious. So
how did you never think of driftwood to beechwood to driftwood in a literal sense, dude,
fuck if I know. I literally did a Mimi Hami Fosteiko on every song on that album when it came out, so
wow.
It's something I do for fun.
Yeah, no, to be fair, Mimi Hami Fosteiko doesn't really do lyrical analysis.
It's Mimi Hami Fosteiko and sometimes text, like A-E-I-O-U, sometimes Y.
Or you could just go Coley, because that's just way faster.
Makes it sound like bacteria.
Laura,
you had a quick note?
I do want to make a quick note, yes. It's similar to Austin's when he was giving his rating. So when I was originally, we were talking about this doing a music episode, I was like, all right, I could get behind this. And then you gave us your notes and it had all of the music theory behind it. And my brain, which was already slightly overwhelmed about work and stuff, went, fuck me, there's no way I'm going to be able to stand up to this episode. Better just talk about the Enterprise theme song then. So I almost did that, which would have been great.
Faster now, because it's been a long time getting from there to here. All right, that about wraps it up. I want to thank any of you listening for joining. I want to thank my representatives for participating in what is a very self-servingly nerdy discussion for me. And I want to thank Reliant K for giving me music that I listen to, because it makes me happy on the inside.
I'd like to not thank Reliant K.
It's...
like, you guys are mediocre as fuck.
Ouch. Listen to the
Would
new
Would you
album.
Like to take his Gold Star Student Award back? Because I'll happily take
listen,
it.
Listen, this whole thing, Mimi Hami Fosteiko, is about objective analysis regardless of some of the other stuff, and objectively analyzing Pat's argument in the context. of musical
theory. The concept of one person doing an objective analysis is a phantasm.
I'm about to make an objective subjective statement. Okay. Objectively, Reliant K is not the worst. But I still don't like them.
I would honestly listen to their new album. It's kind of like a fun piano rock that two dudes made in a house with like a really awesome piano. It's really
and God.
Cool. And Jesus. Jesus is in there too.
And Jesus.
That might be part of the reason why I don't like them. You never know.
Yeah, that's fair. So our topic this week was Man by Reliant K. We also talked about Cosmic Love by Florence and the Machine. We talked about For Whom Annabelle Tolls by Tom McWaters. And we talked about Tempting Time by Animals as Leaders. So,
and I did it all while slightly concussed.
And next week, we have an episode hosted by Laura. What are you talking about next Friday?
Oh, something that you are a huge hater of.
Oh, God. Wait. Next... am I in the episode? No,
you're
okay,
not.
What
good.
Could it
be? Next week, we are going to be talking about the movie Johnny Mnemonic and cheesy as fuck tropes.
Mm.
So we're basically talking about bad movies next week. Johnny Mnemonic is definitely not on Netflix or Hulu, so you got to rent or... It's going to be about bad movies. Johnny Mnemonic is a film with Keanu Reeves. It is truly awful and also amazing. And there's a dolphin in it. So take a watch.
All right, sweet. So make sure to take a look at Johnny Mnemonic. We'll be talking about that next week. That'll be December 1st, 1 week as of your listening. Not 1 week from my friendiversary with Laura
Kramer. That's the first day of Christmas, BT Dubs. You better make that shit Christmas themed.
December's not Christmas. It's fine.
Disney.
Another thing I want to point out is that after this cycle, so after episode 48, we are going to be taking a break from normal episodes. We got some work to do to fix up some stuff on the back end. We are going to be delivering some supplemental content in the meantime, so your feed will still update every week, but we want to try and make sure that the podcast reflects what we can put into it, even if sometimes what we put into it is shit.
Are you starting to do squats then, Colin? You said you were fixing your back end.
All right. Thank you.
He's fixing everyone's
anyway,
back end.
Thank you all for joining. Oh, yeah. Thank you all. Love you. Go listen to some music and think about it critically. Whoa! All right. Bye.
Halloween's over, Colin. Okay, bye.
Bye. Good luck.
This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by Colin Kutchin, joined by the representatives of Laura Kramer, Austin Liebers, and Pat Brem. This episode is sponsored by Fair Use, which really only works because we're actually not sponsored by anything, thank the Lord. The podcast is created and produced by Colin Kutchin and Jeff Levitt, with this episode edited by me, Colin Kutchin, and original music by me, in case you couldn't tell by the everything we just talked about. Once again, we will be taking a break after the next couple of episodes, but next week you will get a full episode hosted by Laura Kramer 1 week from today, so listen to that. And in the meantime, thank you for listening to this.
Today, do we reveal the days that we record these podcasts ahead of time?
Sure. Yeah. This is we're recording on November 2nd at 2017, my friendiversary with Laura Kramer. We met
Happy
5 years ago.
Happy 5-year friendiversary.
Happy 5-year friendiversary.
Oh my God.
Oh my God, guys.
Did you guys just meet as coworkers on this day, or was your friendship consecrated in the Apple Store?
Ask
us.
Our friendship was consecrated when we went to see Guardians of the Galaxy in August of 2014.
So. I thought he said friendship consummated, and I was going to say that's a little weird.
Laura and I are just really close friends. Nobody needs to know the details.
Yeah. Amazing.
And now I'm turning red.